Throughout this week, people have different folks who weren't able to make it last week have asked me about this past week's message. For that reason, I am going to repeat some of last week's in a little bit of a different way just to catch us up to where we're heading today. Because another question that had been asked consistently throughout the week was, what, as a progressive Christian community, do we do with the story of Easter? And hopefully I begin to just open a little bit of that for us. There's not enough time here to kind of completely unpack it, but we can start looking at it. So my message today is entitled Easter as a Parable. If Palm Sunday, as I presented last week, is about confronting the powers that be, Easter is about how far the powers will go to protect their domination. It's also the story about how far love will go for the sake of divine justice, and the story of the resurrecting power of love and of hope. Even with the gruesome reality of Jesus' suffering on Good Friday, our modern-day understanding of Holy Week and Easter has ultimately it's undersold the dangerous reality and the implications of the Easter story. The Easter story should actually leave us all kind of quivering in our boots. And it should also inspire us to act with a greater love that might ultimately, though, put us at personal risk. As I talked about last Sunday, Jesus' entry into Jerusalem, humbly riding into town, bouncing around on the back of a previously unridden donkey, with people gathering around him and singing and shouting, "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord," it's a signal to us that Easter is going to be a story about confronting the powers that be, because it stands in stark contrast to the actual ruler of the region, Pontius Pilate, who was sort of the governor. The entrance that he would have made would have looked so different than Jesus's. As Rome's official authority, he would have paraded through the front gates of the town, riding on a mighty steed, surrounded by Roman soldiers. The confrontation of the powers at Easter begins with that quiet announcement by Jesus riding in through the back gates. And it happens as folks are gathering in Jerusalem to observe Passover, the annual commemoration of Moses leading the Israelites out of Egypt to escape a repressive and enslaving government. So it happens in a setting that recalls the power of the people when it comes to escaping tyrannical and oppressive regimes. And as you might imagine, Rome as a tyrannical and repressive regime were somewhat weary of this kind of celebration. The Romans certainly did not want the Hebrew people getting any ideas about another exodus, but this time from the occupying Roman government. Given these realities, we begin to understand how that first Easter would have been quite dangerous. After his humble entrance into Jerusalem and seemingly out of character, Jesus enters into the temple courtyard and strikes at the heart of the main source of the religious institute's funding. The money changers and the traders who had set up shop in the temple are taking advantage of their monopoly and are taking advantage of mostly poor travelers. And since the religious institute and the government were closely tied, Jesus' cleansing of the temple, it was the beginning of his end. He'd gone from an annoying sideshow along with all the other supernaturally endowed teachers of his time, which actually there were a whole lot of them. He'd gone from being this annoying sideshow being a viable threat to the state. So the powers that be begin to conspire against him, just as the powers that be will always do when they are threatened. From that point on, the storyline gives us a reality check about how far the powers that be are going to be willing to go to protect their status and their wealth. Confronting the powers that be can be dangerous work. It should not be taken on lightly. It can be unsettling, uncomfortable, and downright unnerving. The powers that be will not go down gently. They never do. They will use every tool available to them to maintain their status, wealth, and control. In confronting them, we risk our good names, our freedom, and even our lives. Yet we are morally obligated to confront them. Yes, we are called to do so lovingly, but confront them we must, because they will not relinquish their power gently. Which on a day like today, Easter Sunday, brings me to this question. Why did Jesus die on a cross? I suspect that question has been asked ever since the very day that Jesus actually died on the cross. The most common answer for many Christians, one that will be heard time and time again in Christian churches today, is that he died on the cross to pay a price for our sins, known as penal substitutionary atonement. And true, substitutionary atonement, that idea is actually a relatively new concept. In fact, it only became a part of Christian teaching about, get this, it only became a part of Christian teaching 1,600 years after Jesus was crucified. I, for one, doubt that that was the reason Jesus was sentenced to corporal punishment. Amongst his greatest teachings was this: no one has greater love than this, that they lay down their life for their friends. Why did Jesus die on a cross? Jesus died on the cross because he offended those in power. Jesus died on the cross because he challenged the status quo. Jesus died on a cross because love would not sit silently by as those who had so little were being stepped on, used, and abused by those who had so much. Why did Jesus die on a cross? Jesus died on the cross because the powers that be feared what love looks like in action. As I talked about a little over a month ago, sin is any action that separates us from God. The actions that separate us from God are unloving actions. And Jesus came to teach us that religious law was actually supposed to be designed to help us avoid unloving actions and shouldn't be used to divide and marginalize people. And he also came to show us what the fullness of love looks like in action. It looks like healing people who are hurt. It looks like feeding people who are hungry. It looks like loving people who are shunned. It looks like defending people who are overwhelmed. It looks like friends sharing food together. It looks like grieving together over the loss of a friend. It looks like conversation over a drink of cool water. It looks like helping the celebration along at a wedding. It looks like helping the lost find meaning. It looks like confronting the powers that be, even in the face of personal loss and risk. It looks like a man sentenced to death by the government because the threat of death from the most powerful government on the face of the planet was not enough to subdue his love for those who were being taken advantage of. Did Jesus die on the cross to save us from our sins? Yeah, but it wasn't a moment that erased our sins in some sort of mystical magic show from above. Jesus' death showed us how far love will go, what love looks like when it is played out to its fullest. It taught us a very important lesson about what happens when we consistently and lovingly confront the powers that be with nonviolent resistance. For just a moment, stop thinking about Easter as a story of something that someone thought was true. Instead, just consider it as a parable. And in this parable, our protagonist spends most of his life confronting those who abuse their power and step on the least of these. He confronts the powers that be. And the powers that be decide that they need to squish him out because of it. And they kill him and they bury him and they believe that they are done with him once and for all. But they're not. He returns. He goes to his friends and tells them to spread the good news to the ends of the earth, and they do. Now, taken as a parable, the good news that they spread to the ends of the earth would be this. With love, there are no endings, only new beginnings. The powers that be sought to end him, but they could not. As a matter of fact, those particular powers that be have long since fallen. But the movement of love that was reborn on that first Easter continues on to this day, even in this room. And that's the moral of the story. The powers that be are always, ultimately, ended by loving, nonviolent resistance. Where there is love, endings are nothing more than new beginnings. Put simply, the moral of the Easter story is this. Love wins.